All right. Welcome to Literary Loitering, part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We are the Geek Show's dedicated arts and books and culture and unenthusiastic Matthew McConaughey impersonations podcast. You've just heard one part of our vital remit there. Now here's for the rest. I'm Graham, and I've been joined by Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
Weird, vague, rah, sounds what I found. Ow! I just pushed myself in the chest. Why does Matthew do that?
Why are you surprised that that hurts?
Because he's so good at acting, is why. He made me believe in the world where it doesn't hurt to punch yourself in the chest.
Oh, what's her name? Played Catwoman. I've forgotten the name. The actress.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
No.
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway called it the reconnaissance, didn't she?
She did, yes. Yeah, that was his skill set. He could punch himself in the chest and it looked fine. They gave him an Oscar for that.
Yeah.
So yes, like I say, we cover books and we normally like to get started by asking what everyone around the table's been reading this week.
Trash fiction from the East. There's nothing different there.
Should we just record this bit and play it again every single episode?
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much now. I've been catching up with a book series I put down for a while because I basically caught up with it. It's so far, it's 1,200 chapters long, right?
Jesus.
I put it down when I hit chapter 700, and that was it. I left it for a while and read other stuff. And I thought, okay, let's see where it is now. 1,200 chapters. Oh, God. So I sat down and started reading it and continued to read a series called Overgeared, which is a sci-fi VR MMO novel, basically about virtual reality gaming and stuff like that. And aside from the obvious artistic license with technology and things like that, you can always tell when an author doesn't quite understand the technology that goes into things like artificial intelligence and things like that, because
yeah,
they make it sound a bit more advanced than it could possibly be in that form. But yeah, aside from bits like that, in general, it's got some good ideas and it's got some interesting characters. And I quite like the main character, a Korean guy called Shin Young-woo. Grid is his game name, because he's one of those characters who starts off being very mean and selfish, and he's not had an easy life. People have looked down on him all his life, stuff like that. He's always been the one stepped on, everything like that. So his personality has become very mean and selfish, but he's got one ability that kind of pushes him through, but still.
Oh, me. Is it that he's really good at noughts and crosses, and that's why he's going to
Not quite. He just works hard, that's it, because he's used to doing manual labour. Those are the only jobs he's good for. And he gets a class called Pagma's Disciple, which is the disciple of a legendary blacksmith, and that changes his life forever.
God, I feel like I've read all 700 chapters with you, William.
Basically, you have. That's all you need to know about the book.
Okay, fair enough. I have read Who Owns England, a non-fiction book by Guy Shrubsole. He's a man with the soul of a shrub. This is a book about land rights in England, specifically England, because as with every other political issue, Scotland and Wales are significantly ahead of the big bit of mainland Britain on this.
Is it still this case that the Queen owns everything?
No, that's not technically true, although they own a fair bit of it. 1% of this country owns 50% of the land, and despite Thatcher's determination to make us into a nation of property owners, I believe the amount of Britain that is owned by people who were not either aristocrats, corporations, or dodgy Russian oligarchs currently stands at about 3%. It is full of interesting facts like this, but it is sort of a campaigning book, and I have a problem with the way that campaigning books are written, in that you know that whatever is written, however positive or depressing the picture of what he's studying is, It will end with about three paragraphs where he goes, "It's time to stand up. It's time to get on our feet. It's time to get out the door. It's time to go to the shops. It's time to buy some," etc., etc.
Yes, it's time to sit down and think of some more empty platitudes that I can yes. at the end of my paragraphs.
See, to me, those just sounded like disco lyrics. It's time to get up. It's time to stand up.
He missed his calling there. I would like to see a few more explicitly land reform themed disco tracks.
Yes.
But he is a very meritorious person, despite my slight misgivings about his form. He has recently been in the news having a, as part of the spearheading a sort of Right to Roam campaign with Nick Hayes, who's wrote the new book, The Book of Trespass. And he recently tweeted a government advert saying people should visit the countryside with the slogan, "Welcome back to getting off the beaten track," to which Rubsall pointed out, "If you do get off the beaten track, HM government will brand you a criminal."
I like it.
Yes. Andrew?
Yeah, I have... Again, like the previous few shows, I've continued to be skipping through the field with Image Comics.
Cool.
This time I have been reading the series Criminal by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Mm-hmm. And do you know what the thing is about Eisner Award-winning crime noir drama series Criminal?
I don't.
It's pretty good.
You get out of town.
I know, yes, that is my shocking hot take this week. Is that the series that's widely considered to be the best series in modern comics is pretty much that. It's very interesting. It's almost like Frank Miller's Sin City, but if instead of kind of being a love letter to 50s noir and just mad hamster brainedness, it was kind of filtered through the lens of kind of Martin Scorsese and Michael Mann and that kind of more of modern day crime drama type cinema.
Because I really enjoyed Sin City back in the days before we learned that Frank Miller considered it a blueprint for a perfect society or something.
Yeah, exactly. And Criminal it's kind of similar in that sense of it's this kind of the term I've settled on is hyper-noir.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, noir on steroids.
Yeah, it's set in a city that is just the worst city. Like, everything's grimy. Corruption is everywhere. Criminals. Yes, yes, basically the entire northeast. And the idea is each volume is kind of a standalone story that also ties into just this sort of larger narrative of the world. And kind of it's very fun just kind of gradually piecing together things like that. You have this kind of disconnect with the modern day characters who are all the descendants of kind of these semi-legendary figures who were active in kind of like the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah.
And it's kind of this idea that was like a golden age of crime.
Yeah.
And now everyone's just trying to like go about their lives and deal with that legacy.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it does.
It is.
Yeah. So, on to the news. And I have an exciting announcement about what we won't be covering in the news this week.
Game of Thrones?
I have two exciting announcements about what we won't be covering. Because, yeah, contrary to last episode's New York Times story, George R. R. Martin doesn't actually seem to have been doing that much at all.
Which is remarkable, given how many things he's distracted by on a daily basis.
Yes. No, this week, our news section will contain not one single story about coronavirus.
Wow. Is there a story about the American government?
Finally. This is the bright future that Boris promised us.
Yes, I'm voting Trump now. He has clearly got it under control. But yes, in answer to Rob's question, I cannot promise no stories about the American government. In fact, I cannot promise that we're not going to do a story about American politics right now, because we are.
Did someone get fired and write a book again?
No. This is a book written by someone who should be fired, namely Sean Hannity from Fox News.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
So you're not excited about the news that he's got a new book coming out soon, then?
Do we have to talk about Hannity?
I realise it is a particularly onerous task, but this is not really an article about Hannity. This is an article by Spencer Alexander McDaniel, a student at Indiana University, who is studying classical studies and history.
Of course he is, with a name like that.
Well, yes. It's looking back to the happy days when it was normal to have three names. But he has checked out the cover to Hannity's new and remarkably pompously titled, and I'm going to read out the punctuation here because I think it's important to get the full effect. Live Free or Die, : America, open brackets, and the world, close brackets, on the brink.
See, I stopped at live free or die, :
Yes, the Die Hard edition where Bruce Willis just went to the proctologist.
I ignored the rest. I stopped at live and call on. Hannity, if you're going to call a book anything.
I mean, I've seen Sean Hannity.
Live Free or Die, call on,
the
yes.
Two choices. I know which one I'm leaning more towards for him. And it's not Live Free.
I mean, as we've demonstrated, there's a lot to be amused about just in the title, but what our redoubtable blogger at Tales of Times Forgotten has spotted is the Latin motto that he has put on the cover of his book. Yes. Live Free or Die, : America, open brackets, and the world, close brackets, on the brink, also has the sub headline, Vivimus vel libero perit Americae, which, according to Spencer Alexander McDaniel's translation, means let's live, or he passes away from America for the detriment of a free man.
Wow.
Excellent.
I was still trying to work out the Latin there. I was going...
it seems that you cannot work out the Latin as it is gibberish.
Yeah, and I was getting confused. I was thinking, yeah, I'm sure that means... But no, why? I'm confused. I don't know a lot of Latin. I only know a little bit.
Very bold of Sean Hannity to acknowledge that someone can die from America.
Yeah, there's something not the stance I would expect from him.
I mean, what is it? Like a drug? Has he injected too much America and now overdosed?
Yes. America has now got such an opioid problem. The whole country is just a big load of fentanyl.
Oh, God. Either that or you just, you know, when you get to the docks at America, you just have to wade through all the smoke, you know, all the opioid smoke.
America, the only country where just the earth itself gives you a contact high.
Oh, God.
Gotta admit, it sounds pretty rad the way Andrew describes
it. Yeah, maybe it's just America's long-term goal has to, you know, to be able to use the word louche in the correct way. America's got to be louche for the next 20 years or so.
What McDaniel thinks has happened here is that Hannity has wanted to make the motto Live Free or America Dies, but as he points out, Sean Hannity is noted for his contempt for those eggheads with their book learning, and indeed even the blurb for this book talks about the dangers posed by academia. So he has typed it into Google Translate, which is the only thing he can find that will give you Vivum Aspel Liber or Perit Americae as a translation for live free or America dies.
So, just winding back just a couple of seconds in what you said there, Graham. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that a news anchor on a news channel in America is promoting not teaching people anything because that is wrong.
I mean, where the hell do you think he's going to get a new audience members from if people learn things?
If that's the case, can't people just ship him out to, I don't know, you know those cannibal tribes in South America? Maybe just ship him off there.
I am very much in favour of sending Sean Hannity to evangelise to the Sentinelese, an island tribe in the Pacific Ocean who were famous for killing all visitors.
Yes.
They're doing great, by the way. Very, very small number of confirmed cases of COVID on the Sentinelese Islands.
Oh, God, yeah. There's that little island that's just off Tierra del Fuego. It's like a tiny little island. It's like big enough for like a small cabin. He could go there and preach to the seagulls and the albatrosses.
That seems a bit unfair to the seagulls.
The lighthouse starving Sean Hannity.
Trust me, it's not unfair to the seagulls. It really isn't. Have you been to the seaside recently?
They are vicious buggers, it's true.
I had one. I was standing at the doorway where I work. There was one sitting on top of a bus stop just eyeing me. I went, "You having a go?" And it just kind of flew off into the middle of the road, just looking back at me like, "Yeah, I'd fight you. I'd fight you, but I've got to go somewhere now."
This is going to end in, I was going to say tragedy, but not that, when Sean Hannity is inevitably mistaken for a battered sausage.
Yes. Is it a recognised phrase for something to end in slapstick comedy?
It is now. Those are stage directions, if ever there were any.
Exit pursued by a seagull.
End scene in slapstick comedy.
Another person who's been having a bit of hassle with his Google searches is John Boyne, the author of The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
So what's he been searching for now?
Well, I can't say his entire search history. You know, that is an area that literary loitering is not willing to get into.
Because we don't know.
Yeah.
I should specify, it's because we don't know, not because we've hacked anything.
No. But, you know, who knows what lurks in the depths of man's search history?
I do. The shadow knows.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin is aware of that. Yes. He seems to have Googled for his new novel, The Traveller at the Gates of Wisdom, which, boy, is that an ironic title that I've only just appreciated. The Traveller at the Gates of Wisdom, which is a serious historical drama, he has Googled how to dye clothes red and ended up with several ingredients that only exist within the game The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
What?
I knew this was going to go left somewhere.
A Reddit user who has the extremely apposite name published the following excerpt. See if you can work out where this goes a bit off the documentary realist trail. The dyes I used in my dressmaking were composed from various ingredients, depending on the colour required, but almost all required nightshade, sapphire, keyswing, the leaves of the silent princess plant, spicy pepper, the tail of the red Lizzlefors, and 4 Hylian shrooms.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, some of those I recognise.
how do you write the tale of the red little foes and not think, I wonder what a little foe is? I should check that.
How? I haven't heard of a little foes, but IGN.com's Breath of the Wild walkthrough is, of course, the world's most trustworthy guide for historical dying techniques. So who am I to judge it? How do you not notice you're reading a game guide?
Obviously, she's not paying attention, you know. She's looking for references. The fact that it says, go down here and then open this door, then open the chest, then you'll have to fight the boss in order to get this particular herb. You know, that they kind of went by.
He just thought it was unusually thorough instructions on how to open your food cupboard.
I'll have to fight the boss. My wife, yes. I wonder if that was the thought process.
Certainly, having to spend several decades trapped inside the Temple of Time and obtaining the Master Sword seems like a complicated way just so that I can do some fishing. But who am I to judge?
Two notable quotes about this story. The writer Dana Schwartz, who posted a thread about this on Twitter, said, he found a site listing monster parts and accidentally put them in his very serious book. I am very embarrassed for him, and this is my nightmare, but it's also very funny. Let this be a lesson to all novelists to read the full context of the things you're looking up for your books, but if you do make mistakes, at least let them be hilarious.
Yes. Also, I am very concerned about anything that claims to be an encyclopedia of monster parts.
I mean, we're getting back into embarrassing things in your search history.
Exactly.
Here,
exactly.
An encyclopedia of giant-sized man things.
You know, you call it the Traveller at the Gates of Wisdom? In my brain, I didn't know this was going to go down a video games route at that point, but when you said the Traveller at the Gates of Wisdom, in my brain, I suddenly went into like a Street Fighter 2 video game where you had the Traveller at the Gates of Wisdom versus the Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
That's the sequel. Everyone's building a universe.
I mean, to be fair to John Boyne, it might take him a while to get onto that. He does have to try and shove his dog into a small ball first. The internet said this was the best way to train it. How else do I beat the Elite Four and become the Pokemon champion?
We've seen in recent years books withdrawn for all sorts of reasons. We saw, who was it? Naomi Wolf, who wrote that book about homosexuality in Victorian times, who had to have it retracted after her data claiming that people were executed for homosexuality was in fact inaccurate. That whole thing just got pulped. Boyne is taking a different route. In a statement on Twitter, he said, I'll leave it as it is. I actually think it's quite funny.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah. He has announced one change for the paperback edition, though he has said that the acknowledgements will now include a bit about The Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
Which is pretty rad.
It is. I hope his acknowledgement is just, it's dangerous to go alone, take this.
And when he says it's dangerous to go alone, he does, of course, mean onto Google.
Yes, without adult supervision.
We've got some news of a hot new writer who's going to be breaking through fairly soon.
Okay.
Nadeem Shamasorjan, who... we'd have to say, I mean, this isn't quite an exclusive, but we are getting on board Nadeem's career pretty damn early, considering that he is four.
What?
He's 4 years old, and he's just landed a...
That's why the ending to that sentence. So, what's he for?
See, I'm glad you went there, because my first thought was Thor.
You've both tried to make this story make more sense.
See, I didn't think he's only Thor. My first thought was Thor, because I heard Thor, whereas Andrew heard Thor, as in Thor something. And, you know, and then I realised you were talking about he's aged Thor.
As in...
4 years
four
old.
4 years from his last book that he wrote when he was 38.
No, as in 4 years since he appeared in this world.
You mean, like, spiritually?
No.
Like, he has been reborn. No, he is...
He is a four-year-old child, yes. Who is currently... he has recently learned to read, and he is writing poetry. He has recently been interviewed on Sky News, during which Kay Burley had to tell him to stop picking his nose.
To which he responded, also... only if you stop first, Kay.
or he could have responded, I'm a best-selling poet, you can't tell me what to do.
Yes.
And then
he's also been interviewed by the Sunday Times, thereby becoming the most emotionally mature person to be published in the Sunday Times.
I'll have you know, the Sunday Times does some great journal. Look, I can't simply finish that sentence without laughing.
Listeners, if you want a hot tip for something dreadful to read, the Sunday Times Culture Supplement is the worst newspaper supplement in Britain, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Okay, in terms of supplements, right, the Sunday Times Culture Supplement is, it's like a Senna tablet, it goes straight through you, a lot of other stuff comes out with it.
I mean, if you are looking for people to be victims on your next killing spree, going through the Sunday Times culture section's correspondence pages and noting down the names and addresses of everyone who's complained about an overly modern Master bus appearing in an episode of Inspector George Gently, is a guaranteed way to find loads of people who do not deserve to live.
Yeah, it's the place where all those people who didn't have the courage to be Mary Whitehouse, basically decided to, you know, they decided to live their lives there.
Yes.
We're getting off topic, but I'm also terrified of this four-year-old author. How?
Well,
I'm 29 and I work in a call centre.
I mean, I hate to call nepotism, but his mother is a lecturer in literature at the University of Reading.
Oh, thank God, it's just that the system's broken.
Denise Johnson-Burt, who is an executive at his publisher Walker Books, says, the poems talk about such important feelings like love and loneliness, and Nadine finds the perfect words. They are simple, inspirational, and have a wisdom all of their own. I mean, they're not bad for a four-year-old, but I wouldn't embarrass myself like that. Would you like to hear a reading from one of his...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. In his poem Baddies, he says, baddies love their baddie friends, even very baddie ones. Policemen might arrest them, but they'll still have their love. I mean, it's not bad, but I don't believe Dominic Cummings is capable of love.
Sorry, repeat that again.
Baddies love their baddie friends, even very baddie ones. Policemen may arrest them, but they'll still have their love.
I mean, it doesn't even rhyme.
I was about to go, number one, it's more of a haiku than a poem, isn't it? And number two, that's a bit high level for a four-year-old, isn't it?
He's got deep thoughts about baddies, which, let's face it, if I was 4 years old at this point in history, I'd be spending quite a lot of my time wondering about them too.
Especially if you're being forced to do poetry at that age.
Yes, if you're lecturing mothers forcing you to get a book deal.
Look, it's all right, you know, and fair play to Nadim. He is only 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no The Tiger by Neil, age six, is it? And again, I quote, "The tiger, he destroyed his cage. Yes, yes, the tiger is out," is legit one of, like, the best poems ever. Because it is great that the tiger's out.
It's fantastic. I mean, any lesser talent would have just had one yes, but the building of tension with the repeated yes is just superb.
I mean, God, Nadim, think about the story you're trying to tell with these works.
But he's only four. He's got two
amateurs.
He's got two more years to learn that stuff. Yes. And a mother who's going to drill it into him. You can be guaranteed now that you pointed it out, Andrew.
Also, I'd like to point out, even very baddy ones is grammatically incorrect. Sort yourself out, Nadim.
I mean, we might not be at the "we've got a book deal when we're 4 years old" level of success, but we are on a podcast, and podcasts have power. Do you want to know how much power?
Go on, then.
They can get a book removed from the British top 10 bestseller charts.
Oh, when did we do that?
Oh my God, can we genuinely have an official podcast feud with Nadim?
I mean, I say that, but the caveat is you can only do this if it is your own book you are cancelling through your own stupidity.
Ah. Well, our own book, yeah, that's not gonna happen. Our own stupidity, on the other hand, there's a very real possibility.
That cup overrunneth. Yes. The crime author Mark Dawson has seen his book, The Cleaner, removed from the Sunday Times culture section again.
Oh, yes. Look, if you eat a healthy, high-fiber diet, you do not need the Sunday Times culture section.
Mark Dawson has been privileged enough to see his book removed from the Sunday Times top 10 bestseller charts.
Oh, well done. This is not stupidity.
After he presumably deliberately said on his podcast, which we're not plugging, that he spent £3,600 of his own money buying enough copies to get it from number 13 to number 8.
See, my thought about this, right? Okay, he's paid the money, but you know what? He's made it back in terms of newsworthiness.
Oh God, yeah.
Yes, but I'm not sure he's actually made it back in terms of money, though.
Well, we don't know. We don't know. See, it's one of those weird things. It might have been on the Sunday Times culture supplement list. But then he might have looked at it and went, yeah, but if I'm on that list, no one else is going to want me on their lists. So how do I get off that list but still manage to get onto everyone else's lists? I know. I have a cunning plan.
I mean, notoriety can sell. One of my great regrets in life, and before I start this, I should say, I don't have a very eventful life, so I don't have cause to regret many missed opportunities. But I once saw a copy of How Opal Mater Got Kissed, Got Wild and Got a Life, a young adult novel, which was removed after it was revealed that large parts of it were plagiarised from other young adult books and, hilariously, Salman Rushdie.
I mean, now I'm very curious.
Oh, wow. Which Salman Rushdie? I need to know.
I think, in fairness, it was Haroon and the Sea of Stories, but it would be hilarious if it just had a massive chunk of Midnight's Children lodged in there. But I once saw that for sale in a second-hand shop, and I really regret not picking it up.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, if I was Mark Dawson, I would be absolutely unapologetic about this. I would just brazen it out. And I guess he's trying to do that, but he's making some rubbish arguments. He said, if I was interested in, quote-unquote, gaming the system, I would have bought 10,000 copies, sat on them forever, and been number one. I wouldn't have discussed it on a popular podcast either. So, in other words, he's saying, I'm not cheating because my effort to cheat was actually quite rubbish.
See, what he should have done there, right? He should have styled it out instead. Don't brazen it out. Style it out, okay? Just pretend you're mute and pause. That's it, right? That's all you do.
I feel like the absolute power move is to say, yes, that's right. I'd spent £3,000 buying hundreds of copies of my own book because it's that good.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one as well. See,
that's the best one.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, whenever someone asks him a question, he strikes a different pause. That's his answer.
I mean, that might be good for his interviews, but it's going to really harm his podcasting career.
I don't know. We always talked about next level podcasting and art house podcasting.
Maybe.
Silent podcast, yeah. Or a podcast where he only makes weird noises. No, that one.
That sounds great. That would be like the Cardi B podcast, wouldn't it?
Kind of, yeah, but it'd be more like the Jeremy McBoing Boing of podcasting.
I mean, again, that's basically who Cardi B is, isn't it?
So, I like to cast the net wide in terms of the sources that I use for this show, which is difficult as The Guardian is currently the only British newspaper that actually still has a cultures and books section that hasn't been cut to ribbons. But I am pleased to say that I have found a news story from one of Robin Andrews' favourite sources of news, Bleeding Cool.
No.
Yes, no. This is very much the kind of old boot that you've caught in the net here.
Yeah. I mean, Bleeding Cool, yeah.
It's very much the gossip rag of the comics community.
Yeah, it's the cheesy lap dancing club that guys who think that they're cock of the walk take their girlfriends to because they're such classy gentlemen.
This is based on something Rob has actually seen happening in Redcar, which is amazing.
Basically, there isn't a rumour too, like, far-fetched, lacking in evidence, or potentially damaging to careers that Rich Johnson hasn't looked at and said, yeah, I'll have some of that. Broken clocks right twice a day.
It is the daily sport of...
Hang on, before we started, you said it was the Daily Star of comics. Now it's gone down the rung to the Daily Sport.
No, Andrew said it was the Daily Star. I didn't.
That was me being diplomatic.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from lap dancing clubs and newspapers with nipple counts on the front page and get on to flashing swords.
Okay.
Is that what the club in Redcar's called, Rob?
Flashing Swords, which is not an even remotely unfortunate name, was a series of fantasy anthologies published by Dell Books in the 1970s and 1980s. Yes. It's published works by Powell Anderson, L. Sprague Camp, Michael Moorcock, Jack Vance, and many, many more prestigious names. And now it's being relaunched.
Okay.
That's good, isn't it?
Okay.
Except several writers who have been lined up for Flashing Swords 6 have...
The sentence just... Several writers who have been lined up for Flashing Swords.
Nothing funny about it.
Just Conan the Barbarian in a big trench coat. One of the writers yelling, have a look at this.
It just sounds like a police lineup. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, several writers who were going to be published in the anthology have withdrawn following them reading the introduction, which you'd think, how contentious can the introduction to an anthology of fantasy stories be? Well, here's an excerpt. Here's a sample paragraph from the foreword by Robert M. Price. And I think any fantasy lover will agree this is the kind of high heraldic roister-doistering and untrammelled imagination with which the genre is rightly associated. The continuous false rape accusations serve the same end, seeking to make natural masculine interest in women into a so-called rape culture. Of course, such wolf crying works against women, because soon it will become habitual to dismiss every rape accusation as the shrill lying of yet another Lena Dunham. There's more at work here. It smacks of an ideology of man-hating.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about fantasy literature. Is it normally this, not all men?
Well, here's the thing, right? Robert M. Price, I know a little bit about him, right? Yeah.
I feel like I know a little bit about him just from hearing that.
I feel like I could predict his Google search history.
Yeah, aside from being a former Baptist minister, let's throw the religion right in there to begin with, he's also a bit of a Lovecraft fanboy.
I mean, not bad in and of itself, but coupled with that, you have to wonder which aspects of H.P. Lovecraft he finds particularly enjoyable.
Yeah. And he's also a fellow of the Jesus Project.
What is the Jesus Project, apart from a bitchin' early 70s prog rock band?
The Jesus Project was, it's that thing that's been in the news recently, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know anything about this.
Yes. I mean, to explain things to you, Rob, usually when someone asks, what is the insert name here, they don't know what that thing is and would like you to explain what it is to them.
Okay. This was a five-year investigation to examine whether Jesus existed as a historical figure or not. So,
thanks. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And he's done some criticism stuff, but, you know.
Oh, boy, has he done some criticism stuff. A bit further down, he has. He claims that pornography is, and I quote, merely highlighting an aspect of women's beauty.
Really?
That's art criticism, isn't it?
No.
That is Ready Player Yikes.
Yeah.
Extremely apt, considering Ernest Cline's poetry.
Yep.
Indeed, that was where I was going with it.
And even the Wikipedia article about him, which I've got in front of me, says is talking about what you're talking about, saying that the authors have withdrawn because they found him to be transphobic, misogynistic, and racist.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of transphobia in there as well. I can confirm that.
In a modern civilized, use the term very loosely, but in a modern civilized...
In this hellhole we currently live in.
We are, we claim to be more enlightened beings, but... I don't know, Graham. It's all too depressing.
It is a bit bleak, yeah. Shall we get on to something a bit more slapstick?
Yes,
please.
This is actually a story from February. I found out about it last month, and I thought this is well worth breaking the usually stringent rule we have about only doing news stories that have broke within the last 2 weeks, or possibly a month, or maybe a bit further back, I don't know.
Oh, God, I'm not going to say what I'm going to have to.
Go on.
There's a Family Guy sketch involving Charles Manson from, like, the early seasons. Where he's sitting in prison, and his line is, if I haven't seen it, it's new to me. And that went through my head when you were saying that.
Okay. That's a story that could work better with a bit more context, but okay. Yes. Gabriel Rico, a conceptual artist, was exhibiting his latest work at the Zonamaco Art Fair in Mexico City. His piece was called... And see if you can spot where the story is going from this title of the artwork. Nimble and Sinister Tricks to be Preserved Without Scandal and Corruption 1.
Were they in fact not preserved without scandal and corruption?
They got broke and now there's a scandal.
So, nimble and sinister tricks to be preserved without scandal or corruption. One.
One. Because apparently there's a series.
Okay. Were they nimble and sinister?
Or were they
just broad and speculative?
Well, as I think the name of the piece makes abundantly clear, nimble and sinister tricks to be preserved without scandal and corruption. One is a pane of glass with a tennis ball, a knife, a long twig, and a feather embedded in it. It's worth 20 yes, grand.
Of course.
So someone
because
kicked
of
a,
all the art.
So someone kicked someone kicked a football and it broke it. Did they?
Well, the football is delicately embedded within the piece, within the glass. And I'm not clear on how Rico did it, but now no one will be, because the art critic Avelia Lesper tried to demonstrate her contempt for the piece by resting a cork can on part of it, at which point it burst into thousands of pieces.
Wow.
I mean, to be fair, that's a pretty good way to show your contempt.
Well, you know, it is if you throw the coke can at it, not by gently resting it on there.
We are going through a bit of a good week for excellent statements about potentially embarrassing things, and I think joining John Boyne in the good job there stakes. Avelina Lesper's statement was, "It was like the work somehow knew what I thought of it."
And decided to kill itself? I seriously doubt it. Because if works of art could hear what people thought of it, Tracy Emin's Unmade Bed and like half of Damien Hirst's stuff would not exist.
But Tracy Emin is like an IRL troll. The more you hate on her, the messier her bed gets.
Is it some kind of weird picture of Dorian Gray thing?
The bed gets more unkempt and bohemian. She becomes more of a fucking Tory.
I mean, I feel this thing is just basically our dream on the podcast, isn't it? You can criticise something so hard, it just shatters.
It feels like what would happen if Wes Anderson made a Stephen King adaptation. A version of The Dead Zone where people are just particularly incisive critics.
Oh, God, can you imagine Wes Anderson's Tommy Knockers?
I'd rather not, to be honest, but... I mean, I have to admit I have a slight crush on the man, but I wouldn't go that far. Yes. Wes Anderson brings out his Tommy Knockers after wearing a corduroy suit that is slightly too tight.
Oh.
And finally, just some silly stuff, really. Bit of daft stuff, bit of a daft laugh, just that sort of stuff. A library book has been returned to Shetland Library 37 years late, and 750 miles away from where it was picked up.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. The book was booked out at Shetland in July 1983. They got it back after receiving a call from a library in Suffolk who asked if they were interested in still having it in stock. And I know what you're thinking. This could only be better if the book had an incredibly hilarious name. I'm pleased to say that it is by Peter Bull, and it is called To See in a Sieve.
Okay.
It's apparently a memoir of Peter Bull's time in the Navy during World War II, but I prefer to see it as a children's novel about a cat who just goes out to sail the world in a sieve.
I mean, almost definitely what's happened is that some, like, art student has got it out, and he's going to read it to show how cool and knowledgeable he is. Got about three pages in, gone, "Ah, no, this is really boring." But I can't just take it back, because then they'll know that I haven't read it. And yes, I've just horribly misjudged what an appropriate amount of time is.
Yes.
And also made the mistake that I'm sure all of us have made, where it turns out that all libraries don't actually just have big long tubes connecting to some kind of central book reserve.
Or maybe
that's the libraries we were promised in science fiction.
Or maybe someone bought it as a gift for Danny John Jules and he took one look at it and said, nah. Danny, here's some reading material for you while you're on holiday.
I'm afraid to ask, but why Danny John Jules?
Cat.
I mean, it's not actually about the cat. That's I know. That's what I wanted it to be about.
I know.
Oh, so you're saying that someone had the same thought process as me?
Yes.
That's never happened before.
It could do, you never know.
I forgot that the word cat was in... What was the full title again?
To See in a Sieve.
My first thought at that title was, I used to do that when I was a kid, pretending to be a fencer.
Yes. On guard in a sieve.
Now it just sounds like a spell from Harry Potter.
I'm just still bemused by this idea of returning it 37 years late to a different library.
It's almost like a conceptual work, isn't it? If only we had new literary loitering hero Avelina Lesper in to say whether this was art or not.
I mean, I'm certainly challenged by it more than I am just some glass with, like, a knife in it.
Yes! If I want to see some glass with a knife in it, I'll just go for a walk around Grove Hill.
Yeah. So, was that it?
That's it.
Because I got something nice for you guys if you want it.
Excellent.
You remember a while ago we did badly translated movie titles?
Oh, yeah.
I've got a few more for you.
Excellent. Brilliant.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, can one really be ready for this?
Okay, right. This is a movie from 1999. And in the Philippines, it was called Because She's Ugly.
Because She's Ugly, from 1999, so it's too late to be the Elephant Man.
See, annoyingly, I think I know what the answer is. And because of that, I'm now struggling to think of funnier joke answers.
I don't know what this is. Because She's Ugly. I'm trying to think of a sort of movie with a prominent romance plotline from 1999... But, you know, if I say Notting Hill, that just sounds horrible to Julia Roberts. I'm going to say it anyway, because I'm interested in being horrible to Julia Roberts, but, you know.
Better. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Shallow Hal.
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. Never. Ah. It's Drew Barrymore. Never Been Kissed.
Ah! I think I was thrown off the scent because Drew Barrymore is lovely.
Okay.
You forgot to take into account Hollywood Ugly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is just wears glasses.
Yeah, braces exactly. On her teeth. Yes.
In Spain, this 1989 Hollywood movie was called This Dead Person Is Very Alive.
So too early for the Tupac Shakur biopic. I'll say Weekend at Bernie's.
Something that isn't Weekend at Bernie's. But it probably is Weekend at Bernie's.
The remains of the day.
Yep, Weekend at Bernie's it is.
God, for a second there, I thought you were going to say it really was the remains of the day.
No. Weekend at Bernie's, definitely. Right, so, this 1998 movie... in Thailand, was called Dimwit Surges Forth.
Dimwit Surges Forth. Oh, boy.
That could be anything, couldn't it?
Yeah. It's a great title, though.
Oh, no. Is it Forrest Gump, Rob?
I would be much happier going to see a movie called Dimwit Surges Forth than a movie called Forrest Gump. I will say, cursed with the ability to be able to remember the years that a movie came out. Maybe my mind's still on a sort of Drew Barrymore track, but I'll say The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler as Dimwit.
Oh, Graham, you're so close. You're so close.
Oh, is it literally any other Adam Sandler film? Because they're all the same.
Getting close, but there's one in particular from 1998, which was kind of Adam Sandler's version of Forrest Gump, which came out in 94.
Mm. Is that one Little Nicky?
No.
Or is that The Waterboy?
Yep.
Waterboy, yeah.
Oh, hooray. I don't think I've been more disappointed to know the right answer to something.
Okay. This one should be a pretty straightforward one. This 1997 movie in China was called Satan Female Soldier.
Wow. That's the straightforward one, yeah. Satan Female Soldier. Fighting for her client. No, that's Single Female Lawyer. Satan Female Soldier.
What was the year again?
1997. Do you want to know who directed it?
Oh, go on then, yeah.
It was Ridley Scott.
Oh my God! Is it G.I. Jane?
Andrew, what do you think?
I mean, I guess it has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But there were, why would you call it G.I. Jane and not Satan Female Soldier?
It's a good name, isn't it?
It's incredible. I can kind of see why the US Navy were unwilling to be linked with Satan, but it works.
Okay, from 2000, this movie... It has two interesting titles from two different countries. In Germany, it was called Cuckoo. But I think the oddest title is the Japanese title, which is 17-Year-Old Girl's Medical Chart.
That's like about 50% of Japanese cinema could be described by that.
Exactly.
What year did you say it was again?
Year 2000.
Year 2000, okay.
I mean, I assume it's like some kind of film about a girl and she gets taken in by a family, but she's a serial killer or something.
Ah,
is that anything, Graham?
Well, I don't know if that is anything, but it's how I think my choice should have ended. Is it American Beauty?
No.
Oh.
Well, I say it says the release date was 2000 in the UK. Okay.
Right.
But it looks like in America it was 1999. So maybe that changes things.
Medical chart. Cuckoo. Late 90s to early 2000s. I don't know release dates. What was a film that came out around then?
Andrew, I'm pretty sure Metropolis is from about that time.
Wow.
I'm not entirely sure I believe you, Graham.
Well, it was nominated for the Teen Choice Awards.
So it's probably not.
Oh, good. No, and actually, shut my mouth because I just want to check. But Metropolis, the anime movie, did in fact come out in 2001. Oh, wow.
I was accidentally right.
Shall I tell you?
Metropolis, the 2001 anime film.
No, it was Girl Interrupted.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, that sounds very different with that title, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Clueless. I should have said Clueless. That would have been a fun goof.
Cuckoo is staggeringly offensive.
Yep. But you got to hand it to Germany.
Yes.
Anyway, from 1995, in China, this film was called Excitement 1995.
The prequel to Space 1999. Excitement 1995. I'm pretty sure Independence Day came out in 1995, and that was exciting.
What about Metropolis, the 2001 anime movie?
This one,
Tank Girl came out around 1995, I think. So, yeah, let's say Tank Girl.
Right. The thought process that's gone into this particular name, this particular translation, I really don't understand. It's the Shawshank Redemption.
I mean, I guess it's a bit exciting at the end, isn't it, when he escapes?
I feel glad that I didn't get that.
Yeah. I mean...
I guess all the adjectives you could use for Shawshank Redemption. Exciting is not the worst one, is it?
Exactly.
It's not. No.
Okay, right. This... Sorry. This 1983 movie, it's got some very well-known scenes, but in China, it was called Just Send Him to University Unqualified.
What could that be?
1983.
Is that about the right time for Animal House?
I think Animal House was a little earlier. I'm thinking in the same area, though. I'm thinking it might be Trading Places.
Think about the Chinese title. Just Send Him to University Unqualified.
I'm thinking about it and it's not helping.
University Unqualified. Oh, I've got it.
Oh?
It is, of course, Metropolis the 2001. No, I don't know.
I'm sticking with Trading Places. I think that's the best guess I can make.
Well, do you remember that film where Tom Cruise slides across in his underpants and a shirt and socks?
Risky Business?
Yep. That's why I said think about the Chinese translation.
I'm thinking about it. It makes jack all sense.
Well, Risky Business. He's a high schooler who's looking for a scholarship.
Maybe. I've never seen it. It looks awful.
It's not a good film.
Yeah, I've just seen that one scene of him doing the slide. But have I even seen that scene, or have I just seen other things parodying that scene?
Yeah, it's one of those films where if you've seen its pop cultural footprint, you've probably had a better time.
Okay. An easier one for you then. From 2007.
Hmm.
In Peru, this film was called Slightly Pregnant.
That's quite good. Well done, Peru. I think that'll be knocked up.
Nice, easy one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the only kind of mid-2000s pregnancy-based film title I can think of.
Either that or Prometheus.
No, Prometheus's Chinese title is The Best Way to Do Science is Face First.
Yeah, that works. Okay, so, from 2003, this film in Portugal was called Meetings and Failures in Meetings.
Okay. What came out in 2003? I'm pretty sure Ang Lee's Hulk came out in 2003, but I'm not sure.
It did come out in 2003.
And technically it is Meetings and Failures in Meetings.
Plenty of failures in meetings in that one, but I don't think that's it. Meetings and Failures in Meetings. Oh. I fear someone has actually found a worse title for Love Actually.
Oh, no.
Are you going with Love Actually as well, Andrew?
I'm
going
to stick with Love.
I know you're going
for it,
Brent.
Much as I do want to go for Ang Lee's Hulk, I might have to agree with Love Actually.
Okay. No, thank God.
Right.
It's lost in translation.
Oh, it works on so many levels. There are meetings, there are failures in meetings, and the whole title is badly translated.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. 1998. Held by Wind in Montana is the Japanese title of this American movie.
Held by Wind in Montana.
Okay, so it's not Wizard of Oz.
That was a really bad case of gas.
Yes. Held by Wind in Montana.
What was our film about the Zeppelin?
Yes.
I don't know why, but I feel in my heart this film has Nicolas Cage in it.
I feel in my heart every film has Nicolas Cage in it. Held by Wind in Montana. I'm trying to think. Films made in 1998, and all I've got is Boogie Nights, which is definitely not Held by Wind in Montana.
Yeah, I mean, God, I'm trying to think of just films set in Montana.
It's harder than you think, isn't it? I can think of Cattle Queen of Montana, which has a clue in the title, but that's about it.
I might have to settle for one that's neither and just say Leaving Las Vegas.
I'll say The Ice Storm. Guess I've got Ang Lee on my mind.
Oh, sorry. My brain, when you said that, my brain went, "You are Ang Lee on my mind." It was directed by Robert Redford, The Horse Whisperer.
What?
Exactly.
What do they think whispering entails?
I don't know. Anyway, I'll make this the last one, right? This 2010 movie in Thailand is called Zany Son-in-Law, Zippy Grandkids, Sour Father-in-Law.
Okay, I'm at a disadvantage because it sounds like something I would never, ever watch.
Yeah, judging by, like, kind of contemptuous bile sort of rising in my stomach as I heard that title, I'd have to go for something like Meet the Fockers, I think.
Oh, that's good. Yes, of course it is. Yeah. Yeah, I think you've got it.
It's either that or one of those films that's basically that, but it's got a different title, but it's literally just the same film. They're all just the same thing. They keep making it.
I'm going to give you points. It was actually part of the Fockers franchise. It was Little Fockers.
Oh, I see, because it sounds like Fockers. I've just got the joke, sorry.
Okay, yeah, well then, you've got it. You've got the one joke in those films.
So, yeah.
That was good.
I don't know who won. Really, I don't care.
In a way, we all lost.
Yes, it was very much the Alien versus Predators of quizzes.
I mean, I do want to know what Alien... Actually, I'm gonna see what that is. What is the translation? I need to know now. I need to know what the bad translation of Aliens versus Predator is.
I would bet on it's actually just Aliens versus Predators in all languages.
I don't know. Let's go with Khmer first, yeah?
Alan versus Potato.
So we'll go with Khmer, and then we'll translate it from Khmer to, I don't know, Macedonian. And then we'll translate it from Macedonian. This is how I work things, you know, get some of these bad translations.
Okay.
Then from Macedonian, we'll go to, Norwegian. Norwegian's always good. Then from Norwegian, let's go back to English, shall we? Ah, that's boring.
What a colossal waste of time that was.
Yeah, it just comes out as Aliens and Hunters.
Rubbish.
I'm sad now. And you need someone more professional than me in Google Translate to do this.
I mean, I think the issue is you would need to run it through languages that don't have, like, just cognizant words for aliens and predators.
Yep.
Mm.
But I think most languages probably would.
Except the language of the Sentinelese people, who probably don't have to worry about aliens or predators.
Yeah, I guess then the title is just Food versus Us.
Yes.
Oh, God. I'm just thinking Man versus Food. Oh, that's a very different program over there, isn't it?
Yes.
Everywhere else is just a guy walking into a restaurant and eating loads of food. Over there, it's a cage match.
Over there, it's a battle for the future of humanity.
Starring John Travolta. So, yeah, that's it. I forgot it's me finishing up, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Is, and you always forget.
That's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then you can find all of our previous episodes on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can look for them on whichever podcast player that you're using. And if you are using a podcast service, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us improve. It does help us with exposure. Also on our website, you'll find reviews of various movies. You'll find all our video games stuff, including our discussion program, Impossible Mission, and our new series where we look at alternatives to new and upcoming video game releases, the big ones anyway. So, yeah, until next time then, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
And I've been Andrew.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.